that's something that I think people have to realize, that if you're going to homestead, you're probably going to have a whole nother income.
Yeah.
And on top of that, plan on working all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's the weird, bizarre thing that we're all trying to have a simpler life by making it way more complicated.
But you're working all the time.
That's right. All right. Welcome to Till and Keep Podcast. I have my friend Chad Rosamond with me today. The reason I have you on, I'll do the quick monologue, because I called you and asked if you would come on, and you said maybe, in which I took as a yes, and then gave you no preparation.
Appreciate it.
The reason is your
true friendship, right?
What we explore and what we talk about a lot on the podcast when talking to dads is, you know, is the environment we live in is hostile to the family, and everyone knows that, and a lot of people, we're fighting as best we can with our holy bumper stickers and rosaries hanging from it. But in general, a father thinks more seriously about the structure and like the order of his home, or at least he kind of wants to.
Yep.
So a lot of guys that are on the podcast have taken the route of trying to live on a homestead or do some kind of work or craft with their family. Connor Gallagher, who was in here talking way too long, he's come out with this well-ordered family book and program I had around here. And he was saying, I'm going to take the lessons of corporate America and apply them to my family, which is I'm going to have. And actually, so it sounds like, oh, don't take – corporations are bad. Don't make – but in his defense, he was actually saying, no, the family – and this – the family needs to have structure and order and run like a business. And it occurred to me that actually a homestead – you know, farm, that's actually the main – it is a business.
Historically, that is what it was.
The home is a business. Yes. The home is a place to do something.
Yep.
As I think it was not Russell Kirk – Quest for Community. What is his name?
I've got it. I don't
know. Nisbet. Robert Nisbet.
Yes.
He points out that the family, it was not constituted in its nature to be together, but to do something together.
Yep.
And that a lot of us are trying to figure out what we're going to do. So the reason I wanted to have you on is when I first met you, I guess it was at St. Anne's.
It was at St. Anne's probably 11 years ago.
Wow. And you.
Because we moved here in 2012. Okay. And we met after a St. Anne's Mass.
That must have been similar. Yeah, because we moved back.
Yeah.
We're from North Carolina, so we might have, that must have been around summer time. So we met, and I don't know when I discovered or you told me that you have 10 acres in the middle of Charlotte. So setting the – you're also well-known because you have a special needs son.
Yep.
Very disabled.
Yep.
Likes to draw.
And write.
And write.
Yeah. Crazy stories, yes.
And – you work for a bank.
A large bank.
We don't have to name them. They'll probably crush us.
Yeah.
And so you're working for a large bank. You are working hard. You're a good dad. You love your son. You take care of your son. It's a visible. You know, as far as a family have something to do together, you have a child that needs.
Yep.
Probably most of the family revolves around his needs a lot of the time.
Yeah. You develop a business plan around it and you manage around that. So. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a big part of our family and the way we live life, but he doesn't dictate it at the same time.
So you're ordering around the reality.
You share work around caring for him at the same time.
Okay, that's a good way to put it. But you told me at some point, I have 10 acres in Charlotte. And I thought, what in the world? And I just want to describe, and I want to ask you about it. When I was you gave me directions to your place, and you kept telling me where it was, and I couldn't picture it. And you're driving, and it's just like stores and houses, and it's the city.
Yep.
And then you go down this driveway, and all of a sudden you really, like, you're sandwiched between, like, these pop-up neighborhoods.
Yep. So.
And, like, all right, first of all, before, I want to know how that happened and what you're doing. But why did you do that, and when did you start? I don't know, like, when you kind of had that impulse.
All right. So, we moved to town in 2012. Met you soon after. And before that, we lived in other places across the country. But we had started learning about the benefits of raw milk, actually, with my disabled son. He had some neurological disabilities, and we wanted to give him the best food possible. So we started buying, let's not say raw milk, let's say fresh milk.
Right.
We started buying fresh milk when we lived in Utah.
Okay.
and driving long ways to get it, and we're living in apartments, and we just realized we looking for land.
So before that, you were just kind of eating normal American diet, and your son's health compelled you to look.
I would just say that we've always just eaten mostly American diet.
Right.
Let's not be too boastful on that.
Right.
But yeah. So
you do live in America after
we
all.
We do live what in else America. Are you gonna eat? Yes. So he needed to be fed with a G-tube.
Okay.
So we controlled all the food that went into him. So we wanted to find the best food to put into him.
So you get into raw milk.
So we get into raw milk, and we're like, wow, we really want to have space for ourselves to do something like this. And looking in Utah,
something like growing food.
Growing food, growing livestock.
Okay.
Neither my wife or I grew up with any of this. We grew up completely suburbanites.
Okay.
Some military travel around the country as well, but none of this.
Your parents were military?
My wife's parents were military. My dad worked for IBM. We've called him I've Been Moved. so we moved a lot, but we're always in suburban neighborhoods.
Okay.
Had a garden sometimes, and I grew up doing construction projects and remodeling projects.
So you're somewhat handy.
So I grew up being handy around things.
Okay.
And so anyway, we're in Utah. We're like, well, we don't fit in the culture out here. We like it, but I took a job in Connecticut and lived in like suburban New York City, really.
Wow.
That didn't really fit us well either. We started looking for land there, and then I took a job here in Charlotte.
Okay. So you got here for the job.
We got here for the job, and we started looking like, okay, what does it take to buy land? And our goals really were yes, some homesteading.
Mm-hmm.
But to find a venue for our children to know, one, what work is,
mm-hmm.
two, what the benefits of work are, and three, where food comes from.
Okay.
Right? Four, small entrepreneurship.
Right.
How do you teach a child, here are your costs, here's what the work you put in, here's the benefit you can get out of it. Right? So we've always homeschooled.
So economics.
Economics. Yeah. It's real life economics, real life, learning skills.
Yeah. Competency, work.
Exactly. So we...
So you found the 10 acres.
We found the 10 acres. It's in a part of town that nobody wants to live in. It's the worst schools around. Some mm-hmm. of the worst schools around.
Except for your homeschool.
Except for our homeschool.
Yeah.
And we're sandwiched between a bar and a pop-up neighborhood on one side.
Okay. I don't remember seeing the bar. But
yeah.
That's good.
It's easy to miss. It's okay.
don't look hard. All right.
It's not one we visit. Let's put it that
okay.
way.
Okay.
A church, Church of Christ on the other side. Love our neighbors there. Very good friends with them. Mm-hmm. A gravel quarry across the street, so we get blasts during the middle of the week. You can feel the house shake, and you get dump trucks up and down the road all
right,
the time.
Right.
And then an interstate on the backside of the property.
So that sounds really unattractive.
It's very, but it was very unattractive for other people.
Right.
And then the last unattractive piece was that there is a plot of land in the middle of my property that I don't own, that my neighbors in the back, they bought the house before, and 1 acre around it before my house was ever built.
Uh-huh.
So they have right of way to get there. So nobody wants to deal with that.
Right.
Right? So there are just all these things that were not attractive to other buyers that really, like, okay, we'll deal with that.
Because you wanted the land.
We wanted the space. Yeah. The property was a former bonsai nursery.
Yeah. So
they had a bunch of really expensive potted plants.
That cool greenhouse I've seen.
The cool greenhouse that I don't use effectively.
Yeah.
We dream of using it effectively.
Yeah, totally underutilized.
Yes. But usually it's used to house chickens that we find that have hatched their own eggs.
Right.
Or store hay.
Yeah. So nice and dry.
Yeah.
So you, all right. So this place you find, I mean, you probably rescued it. I mean, I'm sure it would have been inevitably another pop-up neighborhood.
You can actually look at it on the map. You can see the streets from the pop-up neighborhood. They don't end in cul-de-sacs. They end in cut-off roads.
Uh-huh.
That they presume they could buy this property.
Just keep going.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, have they ever come to you?
No, because that neighborhood was built in 2004, 2005, right before mm-hmm. all the housing crisis in the mid-2000s. And that neighborhood, whenever I bought the property in 2012, houses were clearing in the foreclosure in the 50K range.
Wow.
They're not exactly looking to
expand
that project. Now, houses are clearing for what I bought my property for in 2012.
Okay.
So, like, they're selling houses on eighth of an acre, quarter of an acre, for what I bought my 10 acres for.
Wow. So yeah, that's... Yeah.
It's just unique. It's about finding that piece of property that nobody else wants to deal with or do something with or get creative with.
Yeah. Well, I think I think the parts of your story that are compelling that people ought, I mean, to take to heart is people call me all the time and because they want to move to the land, they want a homestead, yep. but they actually don't really want to leave the city.
Yeah.
Because they have certain needs. Yep. So I would presume actually you guys have needs because yep. of your son.
He needs to be close. We have needs for my son.
Your job is in town.
Yeah. I mean, I am 6 miles from my, 43-story office tower that I work in.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that was that close.
Yeah. I can ride my bike there. I've ridden my bike at times to work, and it mm-hmm. takes me 25 to 30 minutes to give you an wow. idea of how far away it is.
Yeah.
Not very far.
That's great. So it's close to work, close to doctors.
It's also
parishes.
We have many local parishes that we can get to. We can get to about 5 different local parishes in 20 minutes.
Right.
And we can be a part of those different communities. And our children in our homeschool can be a part of different activities in those different communities.
Right. You've blended because
yes.
I think people are often shocked if they move to a rural location
yeah.
and they're conditioned to live urban or suburban lives
yeah.
that it can feel isolating. And then what actually happens now in the defense of the rural living, you yeah. just have to reintegrate into your, and like we know all our neighbors, like we're there, but for a lot of people, especially with kids,
yeah.
they just live farther from soccer practice. It's not, yeah. they're not really living any differently. So you found land that you're able to work with. You had the humility to say, I'll live between a bar and a flailing neighborhood
yeah.
And some Protestants and a rock quarry is my favorite. Yeah. I can describe it. I've been there. Once you're in your property, it doesn't feel like that. No, it
yeah.
feels like you're really encapsulated
yeah.
in it.
Yeah, when people come deliver stuff and say, I've been driving up and down this road for 15 years and I had no idea this existed.
Right.
And we're right off of 4-lane road with a
yes, what I'm saying.
Center concrete.
Yeah, you're driving
landscapes
there.
Landscapes divided.
Yeah.
You know, median.
You're not expecting a farm or homestead.
No.
So I think, one lesson from that is you were creative, you were humble, you were willing to take something. Because
yep.
what the other thing I was going to say is people will call and think, man, I just want like 20 acres in the country. I'm like, okay, first of all, you don't want to live
in
the country.
You and I both.
Yeah. And 20 acres yeah. is way too much land for you.
Yeah.
You can barely
keep
your lawn mowed. What are you going to do with 20 acres?
Yeah.
So you've got 10 acres, and it's not as if that whole 10, it's not like pasture. You've had to make it work.
No, I've had to. There's hardly any pasture.
Yeah.
Very little pasture.
And still, you have a lot of trees.
It's just you can spend a lot of money to create pasture very fast.
Yeah.
Or you can put in the labor and create pasture very slow.
Yep. Yep.
So we
need to do another podcast on the pasture decisions because we're moving much more on our farm towards we're trying to do a silver pasture. Although I gave a tour of it and Joel Street was there. I said, well, this is our silver pasture. And he goes, this is not a silver pasture. I thought it was.
Let's take another tour with Joel.
Yeah. we're planting annual crops though for the grazing for
yeah.
the cows.
Oh, yeah.
So we're doing right now we've got winter wheat,
yeah.
rye, and then oats, although the oats died because of the drought. Got me some free government money out of that. That's another story. It's so dumb. I can't believe they just have piles of money. They're just trying to
get rid of it.
They're just forcing it on you.
I get the emails about it, but I haven't raised any crops.
Right. So. No, they came out. Well, anyway, I could tell you the story. They come out and they're not even looking. I thought they wanted to see the animals in our operation,
yeah.
and they're just trying to get rid of money. They're like, are the horses part of the operation? I'm like, agritourism. Yeah. Okay. We'll put them as a cow. Okay. Anyway,
they just pay you straight out of my pocket.
Yeah,
Jason,
we're growing.
Here you go, Jason. Here's a few bucks
for your hay. And then we've got winter wheat. And actually, because the reason you're here is I'm picking up from you. You deal in chaff hay.
I deal in
a
chopped alfalfa.
It's a chopped,
it's a little
fermented alfalfa.
Yeah, yeah. It's sealed in bags. So that's a unique thing about being a farm in the middle of the city is I don't have the community that you have of, hey, my neighbor down the road raised, you know, 20 acres of fescue mm-hmm. orchard hay. I'm going to go get a few round bales from them.
Yeah,
I went and I got round bales last weekend, 2 weekends ago. I drove 45 minutes to get 3 round bales and bring them back.
Yeah, I get mine. A farmer delivers them for free.
Exactly. You could probably deliver it on your tractor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
Yeah. So what it makes it difficult for me is finding good quality items
So the trade-off
is
you
didn't grow up with this.
Yeah.
So I can't discern the same way somebody that grew up with it
right.
would be able to discern.
Yeah, and that can be you're in those situations and you the insecurity is there because like these guys know what they're talking about and I don't.
Yeah.
Now the downside, the trade-off of what, because there are a lot of people that will find the trying to do like an urban farm like you are more attractive. You know, my friend Tommy Van Horn, the beekeeper we had on, he started as a backyard beekeeper. The trade-off is you're actually not in an agricultural area.
Yeah.
But it seems like you have found kind of a niche, like it's like bringing in the, you know, being a dealer for this hay because there's a lot of, so are you mostly when you do, so you're a dealer for this chopped alfalfa.
Yep.
I'm buying some today because government gave me money to. And, that's why I was, like, I was like, yeah, order some.
Yeah.
Well, we had a drought and we have, it has been devastating.
Yeah. You'll see when you come
for our hay bill. Oh, it was awful the fall. But so, you know, I don't want all the operations, I'm sure in the last 10 to 12 years, you've had all kinds of stuff, but it seems like you have a niche of being sort of like a in the city farm connection.
Yeah.
So you might not, it would be, I was trying to bring up, I told one of the farmers out where I live, I'm going to buy this chaff hay, and they're like, you're going to Charlotte to buy hay in a bag? Yeah. I mean, you just couldn't.
Yeah.
It's but
different
is that
stuff though? You'll see a difference in the milk that comes from.
Oh, I know I will. I fed. Yeah. I did feed some.
Yeah.
That Craig gave me. Although I didn't, but it was six cows. I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
So have you? You're. Are you kind of a hub for?
So that's a dream of ours.
Okay.
Is to, you know, right now I source product in because, again, I'm not part of this community. I don't have easily accessible in any other way. So. For instance, 2 weeks ago, I brought in 3 1,000-pound bags of organic chicken feed.
Okay, so the big bags.
The big totes, right?
Okay.
I sent 2 of those to a friend.
Okay.
The other one stays at my house, and people just come and scoop chicken feed out of that 1,000-pound bag.
Wow, is that the first time you've done that?
This is the third time I've done this. I started doing it last June.
It's like Reedy Fork, or
it's not Reedy Fork. It's actually New Country Organics.
Okay.
The Reedy Fork, I don't know. I've heard differing opinions.
The controversies. Yeah, there's different opinions about them.
I personally am not a huge. I have to have organic feed.
Yeah.
But I have friends that are, so.
Me too.
I'm supportive, and I have the equipment.
Yeah,
you're
filling a need. That's a true economic need.
Well, right? What I wanted was their dairy cattle feed
mm-hmm.
because of the cow that I got from you.
Right.
I needed a good feed. I can't go out to, you know, you drive 15, 20 minutes away and get your cattle feed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't have anywhere to do that, so I need to get it in somewhere. Shipping charge was crazy.
Right.
So how can I decrease the shipping charge for me?
Right.
I can do it by getting stuff for other people.
Right. So
it's
that,
just being creative.
No, but I think
again, it's just more creativity.
No, I think it's being creative and it's showing the necessity. For those who are listening and don't understand, you know, dairy cow, and you might be thinking, I want all grass-fed. But dairy cows have been bred to be monsters.
Yeah.
On our farm, we're trying, meaning they give way more milk than they, you know, obviously anything natural. And they need supplemental protein. And not only that, our soils are so depleted in North America, they don't get the nutrients from the grass that they need. So there's a lot of supplemental.
Just do rotational grazing.
Just rotate. I know someone's like, well, we only feed them oats. And I'm like, you know, grains are a grass, by the way.
Yes.
So people are like, well, I only eat grain. I'm like, yes, I understand that. But grains are like the fruit of the grass. And there's a, anyway, another podcast. But you have found, so you're in the city. So the challenges are, you don't, I mean, for me, I can bring my cows to bring them to other pastures. I mean, I've got a neighbor. If I fix his fence, because he's not going to, if I fix his fence, I can put my heifers over there and things like that.
Yep.
So, but you're having to work out. I think it's interesting, and that's a good model because you're actually, besides just your household as an island, you're actually becoming, you know, some sort of economic viability for other people.
Yeah, I would love to, you know, you've brought milk to be.
Oh yeah, sold I distributed off milk my, through.
Off,
yeah,
through,
that's
off
right.
of my property. I've talked to Craig.
Yeah.
About bringing ground beef and mm-hmm. ground and sausage.
Craig is our shared butcher friend.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It you know, and like being a central distribution point for a suburban community that can get access to those things from farms that are further away.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we have a separate garage and we'd love to turn that into a small farm store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll start bringing in, you know, 50 pound bags of feed, you know, for those backyard chickens.
So this chicken thing, this is the first time you've done it this way.
This is
again, buy a toad in. And...
Yeah, this is the since last June. We started in last June. Okay. Really, it was because I ran out of dairy cattle feed that I bought from your
right,
place.
Right.
You know, and it was like, I gotta do something.
I need something.
How can I do this?
That's interesting. So. How have people? Are they coming to you? Are they buying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it mostly Catholics?
Yeah. They're Catholic. It's part of our Catholic communities. I have a friend that she's a single mom mm-hmm. and has a small homestead that's 4 miles from me.
Really?
So she gets stuff. She's been out to your homesteading days.
Okay.
And I have a friend that's out east of town that he raises a whole bunch of chickens and sells eggs to parishioners at a local at one of the churches. You know, after mass, I'll see him bringing. All right, here's your 4 dozen.
Yeah.
Here's your 3 dozen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And but for us, I'm always torn on Sundays. You know, our mass is at 8:30.
Yeah,
and we've got to milk the cows and get the kids
yep.
out. And then I'm
yep.
getting text after text Sunday morning. I'm like, maybe I should put an end to this. Like, can you bring me some milk this morning? Bring me some milk this morning. I'm like, okay. But I mean, we need to sell the milk, and they need the milk. So
yeah.
I guess I'll deliver
yeah.
it. Like Jesus is going to flip our table over one day.
Yeah. We just have people come to the house.
Yeah.
You know, so we
most that's what we would prefer.
Yeah.
But most of the people that are buying from us, I mean, again, it's people that live in the country, but they're not
yeah.
they're not farming. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, so they
yeah.
just want a convenient way to get it. All right. That aside. So you've been doing the chaff hay.
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah. You're saying exactly.
Okay. How long?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Of how you say it. I've been doing that for 7 or 8 years.
And that is, and the people that buy that from you, they're like the goat people, the
it's
horse
some
people.
Goat people, more horse people. For
okay.
instance, the last 5 bags of that I had from my last delivery, which was last summer, I just sold to some people that had 30-plus-year-old horses, senior horses, that can't eat anything else.
Oh, poor thing.
So this is pre-digested, right?
Yeah.
And it's really good for their gut.
Yeah.
So they can
probiotic.
Actually eat this. You know,
so
they came from Hickory down
to buy that.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah, the horse people—that's a whole other.
That's a whole other world that I don't try to get into. But
there's
if,
a lady
if I
near
got
us.
Into it,
no, don't.
I'd have it, no. If I got more connected to it, I'd have more people to sell to.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
No, that's a great. Actually, we do. So, I said I would never get a horse because it's like a teenager, a non-productive
oh
consumer.
My goodness,
but
yes.
we did get. We have a horse now. Did I tell you that?
I've seen the horse.
The neighbor, yeah,
yeah
the neighbor.
Yeah.
Get, oh yeah, you saw.
Yeah, whenever I brought. Pigs out.
She get and it's
yeah.
been honestly, it's been awesome. It's John Senior said every boy needs a horse. So
yeah.
Anyway, although the boys were like, we want a horse, and now my daughter takes care of it. So then, but
that
the horse
sounds about right.
There's a lady near the horse thing can be crazy because
yeah.
there's a lady she like rescues donkeys or something.
Okay.
And she's a landowner, very wealthy, rescues
okay.
donkeys on the side, but she's ripping out one of the most mature vineyards in the county, big old beautiful
huh.
grapevines.
Yeah.
To put in hay pasture to feed these decrepit old rescued donkeys. And I'm like, oh my God. All right. Anyway,
yeah.
she won't listen to this podcast. It's fine. I don't know her name anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So have you guys, you've made it 12 years. My experience, a lot of people, they want to do the homesteading thing and about 2 years, 2 to 4 maybe, and they're done.
It's an up and down.
Okay.
As you know.
So you guys are at Constant Flex.
We started really fast at one point. My now 23-year-old son, who's in a PhD program, at one point built out like 6 chicken coops, mobile chicken coops,
uh-huh.
and was moving them around. So it was a way for him to learn shop skills.
Yeah.
Because outside of me splitting 2x4s on a table saw, he built everything else.
Mm-hmm.
He cut everything. He fit it to size. You know, he
That's
put
great.
Everything else together. It was great. But he was raising 90 laying hens. And moving them around in
these
coops.
You guys had 90 hens?
We had 90 hens. And what I was doing is we were selling 20 to 25 dozen eggs a week. And I would bring them into the office, and I worked at this point on a 500-person trading floor. So really wealthy people, right? Right?
And in everybody the heart knew, of the global economy.
Everybody knew that I was the egg guy, right? So I would just stock 6 dozen eggs in the bottom
and
of the
fridge. And you were charging a premium, right?
I was charging $5 a dozen.
Come on.
Well, so and I was not using organic feed. I priced out how much.
No, $5 is good. It drives me crazy.
About, it was about $2.50 per dozen just I was charging. It cost me to get a dozen eggs. And then I would pay my son the other $2.50. That way he was getting some income from it. Again, like, all right, here's a model. You decide which feed you want to use. You decide which price you want to charge, right? And just those again that those economics.
90 hen. I did not know that.
Oh yeah, it was.
All right, so you like a lot of people, you probably hit it too hard.
We hit it too hard.
We had goats
at the same time. Oh. We had pigs, you know, we didn't have the cow. I had been advocating for the cow since we got there.
I tell you, yeah, the cow.
The cow is the center of the farm.
Now it is.
It should have been for the whole time.
Advocate. I think the Doherty's do a lot of the cow can be overwhelming because you have to milk it every day. But if you're home and you're willing to do it, as far as abundance, space, it's just so much.
Oh yeah.
So now, so you hit it. I did that too. We got turkeys, goats. Oh. We had everything.
Turkeys scare me from Joel Slotin's description of them.
I killed like a whole. I killed a whole bunch of them by accident. I mean, I killed some later on purpose, but that didn't start well. But it ended okay. But then we had goats. But then we got two dairy cows and everything changed.
Yeah.
So now you've scaled back most of the stuff. I mean, are you?
Yeah. So we've got about 25 laying hens.
Okay.
And you know we sell a couple dozen eggs a week. You know.
And then you have a milk cow.
And then we have the milk cow.
Do you still raise pigs every now and then?
What's that?
Do you still raise pigs.
We raise pigs when we have excess.
Okay.
So right now I haven't rebred my milk cow because again that's something that's difficult for me.
Right.
Getting an AI tech to come into the middle of Charlotte.
Yeah.
To breed my cow, I'm certainly not keeping a bull.
Right.
Is very difficult.
Does that make sense? We had the podcast with Connor.
Yeah.
Gallagher, and he was asking me, what would you bring? Would you bring a cow and a bull to Mars if you were?
No, don't bring the bull.
No, bring the semen.
Yeah.
But that's hard for you. So problem maybe solved is we're having trouble getting some of our cows bred back. We do have AI available to us really cheap.
Yeah.
And so we are going to bring a bull onto the farm. So maybe you should just bring your girl there for 2 months.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm willing to give up the milk for 2 months. Well, if I end up, I'm trying to find a second cow in milk. That way I can alternate breedings.
Rotate them.
That way, you know, every 6 months I've got maybe a cow that's freshened.
Maybe we could work
that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway.
We talk about that offline.
Yeah,
that
sounds, yeah.
We got to work that out.
Yeah.
Then we'll do a podcast.
But, yeah, that works. You know, but it's about keeping that excess abundance of nutritional food there on the property.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I had, I'm getting about a gallon and a half of milk every I milk once a day.
Yeah.
Get about a gallon and a half of milk.
So what you need for the day.
I need for the day. And it supports two other families at least. Mm-hmm. I have two other families that just come by the house and they buy milk.
Yeah.
Right? For $5 a half gallon. And they feed it to them.
I thought you were going to say $5 for a I was going to be angry with you. $5 for a gallon is too cheap.
No, they feed it to their pets.
Okay. Yeah.
Pet
milk. Got it.
So anyway.
So you wait. Yes, but you started raw milk and now that's where you're. That's kind of the center of your homesteading now.
Yeah.
Besides
the
buying in stuff.
It is because when we have extra, I'll have pigs on the property and the extra will go to the pigs.
Yeah.
Right? And when the garden is abundant, which we're not very good gardeners, we're making a concerted effort last year and this year to be better gardeners.
Yeah. Well, the good news is gardens start so full of hope every year.
They do.
And then by June, you're like, I hate gardening.
Yeah.
Or no, more like July, August.
More like July, August, yeah.
Like, I'm done.
You know, this past July, August, my disabled son was in the hospital for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that'll ruin a garden.
That'll ruin a garden. although the cucumbers did great. So our pigs, I think they ate about 400 pounds of cucumbers. Because we were just like, kids, just take all the cucumbers and take them to the pigs.
You can market that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, well...
So and we got a couple dairy goats.
Okay, so then I'm going to start wrapping up here.
Yeah.
Your experience was raw milk, led you to the farm. You found 10 acres. You've made it work.
Yeah.
You've been flexible but stuck with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of shaped how your family works around.
Yeah.
How many of them are now... I guess the question I want to bring up, you've had to go through now sending kids off to school and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have any kids that are rebelling against it now, or is it integrated? It's really part of who you are.
I would say that those later teenage boys, not interested in being helpful at all, really.
As they got old, were they helpful when they were younger?
They were helpful. I mean, my oldest was running this egg business. It kind of burned him out, though. He got into high school and was taking 10 classes,
right?
Just didn't have time and was like, well, this is the thing that's going to go,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But funny story about him, he learned all these skills. He learned to be creative on the other thing that I think my children have learned is innovation.
Yeah.
So
make it work.
Make it work. Like we had a tree come down on top of a pig fence.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting ready to, my wife and I are getting ready to go out on our one date a quarter. And my wife says, you figure out how to get rid of this. And it's like a dead tree, hard as a rock. And he can't move it. So he goes and gets a car jack, jacks the tree up, pulls the fence out around the tree, and puts all of that within the pig pasture.
Wow. There. That was not...
So that was whenever he was like 15. Now, just last fall, he's away doing his PhD in meteorology. You know, total computers, programming.
Okay, that's my guess.
Yeah, exactly. Not animal science. And he says to us, I really want to get some more woodworking tools because I have so many skills that I can't use.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I were on the phone with him. We look at each other and we're like, he just told us that he had skills that he can't use. These are skills that he learned on the farm.
Right. Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
These are things that he learned. My second oldest son, about to graduate college, he is probably going to end up in a trade.
Yeah.
You know, like go and be an electrician with my friend.
Yeah.
Come and work with our family business.
So that is what we're going to we're gonna have you back on.
Okay.
Because you are now transitioning out of banking.
Correct.
Into a family business.
Yep.
And I want to ask more about that.
Yeah.
But not now. In the meantime, thank you so much, Chad. It's
been
awesome.
Thank you, Jason. It's always fun to sit down and talk to you. That's not, on the phone as we're going about our various ways. That's something that I think people have to realize, that if you're going to homestead, you're probably going to have a whole nother income.
Yeah.
And on top of that, plan on working all the time.
Yeah. Yeah,
does that make sense?
It's the weird, bizarre thing that we're all trying to have a simpler life by making it way more complicated.
But you're working all the time.
That's right.
So,
all right. Well, thank you, Chad. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jason. It's a pleasure.
This episode of Till and Keep has been brought to you by Tan, Fraternus, and Sword and Spade. Till and Keep is a podcast that shows how the primordial command from God to Adam to till and keep the garden applies whether you toil on a farm or in a concrete jungle. Visit tillandkeeppodcast.com to subscribe and follow the show. And use coupon code TILL25 to get 25% off your next order at tanbooks.com.